Hello everyone. Thanks for joining this cafe club. So it's nice to see people coming in person. So for those who are in remote, thanks also for joining. You cannot see us, but we reached a number of 9 people, including the speaker in the library. So that's nice. So let me introduce the speaker of today, Alin Shu, here, who is doing her PhD with Florence Duret at Institut d'Astrophysique de Paris, AEP. And she's in her third year of PhD, working on galaxy cluster and specializing in some type of galaxies within clusters, so namely the Bryos cluster galaxies, which are the galaxies that lie at the center of the clusters and emit a lot of light. And as well, I think also on jellyfish galaxies.
I don't.
No? Okay, so no, not anymore jellyfish galaxies. So today it will be only Bryos cluster galaxies. So I let the speaker put in. Thanks.
Hello everyone, so thank you very much for having me here today. So I'm going to talk about my work I did with Florence Duret and Isabel Marquez. Isabel works at the IAA, which is in Granada in Spain. And we've been working on the study of the evolution of the physical properties of Bryos cluster galaxies for time. So in short, it's going to be BCGs. And I'm going to first introduce you what a BCG is. So a BCG is by definition the brightest galaxies that you have in galaxy clusters, and they are usually described as supermassive elliptical galaxies. And these galaxies are very special because not only are they extremely bright, they can contribute to up to 15% of the total luminosity of the cluster, which is like very, very, which is enormous because galaxy clusters can be host of thousands of galaxies. And in some cases, when you have groups, for example, in some groups, you have the BGG, which is the brightest group galaxy, which can be up to 2 magnitudes brighter than the circumference galaxy of the cluster. In that case, you also talk about Fossi groups, but it's not really what I'm going to talk about in this talk, but we've been observing a bunch of candidates with Christophe. And I think it's just very interesting to know that these galaxies exist because BCGs and BGGs are very, like they are the perfect candidates to study to see how environment can affect the growth of galaxies. And so BCGs as a cluster forms, the BCG is a galaxy formed as well by accreting gas and merging with other smaller galaxies. And BCGs can reflect, they can mirror the processes that formed today's clusters. And also they can have properties which are closely linked to that of their host cluster. So we are going to see that at the end of this presentation. And there are still, however, a lot of controversy as to whether or not BCGs are still evolving today. So there are some papers which find that they have grown by a factor 2 or 3 in size since redshift 1. And other papers find that they find no evolution, no changes in their size or in their shapes in that same redshift range. So we tried to answer this question as well. Are BCGs still evolving today? And for that, we studied 2 different samples. So the first one was this one. We studied 139 clusters from with images taken with the Hubble Space Telescope. And we went up to redshift 1.8. So we were able to retrace the cluster formation. And in that case, we had spectroscopic redshift and we used HST data, which meant that we had the best resolution possible if we wanted to model the luminosity profiles. But I'm not really going to talk about this study for now, but you can find the results in the paper. It was published last year. And in this talk, I'm mainly going to focus on the second study, which is a study on 1,371 clusters from the CFS TLS, and this time you only go up to redshift 0.7, and you only have photometric redshifts. But the reason that we wanted to study this sample is because if you take the same redshift range, as HST sample, this one. This one was actually the biggest study that was on HST data on BCGs up to in that relative range. If you compare the sample size and up to relative 0.7, we actually increased by a factor of 15 the sample size. So we have way better statistics on, in this study. And hopefully the paper is going to be submitted to NAN by the end of the month, so in a few days. So I'm going to talk about this sample. And so we try to answer the question if BCGs are still evolving today. And for that, we try to see if their photometric properties evolve with time. And for that, we try to model their luminous profiles. And for that, we use, can you see? I hope I shall hide in the screen. And for that, we use Galfit. So for Galfit, basically, you feed it the image of your BCGs, a mask, and the PSS. And then you apply a model. And in our case, we apply two different models. We applied a model with a single CERC component and a model with two CERC components. And for the two CERC components, we added an inner component to take into account of the brighter part of the galaxy. And then Galfit returns the model and the associated residuals. And then, so you can't see because you have the on the right. For each galaxy, we try to see which of the two models we are going to keep. So we used the F-test for that. And what it tells us basically is if you really need a second component to well model your galaxy, or if the two models give you comparable results. And that's how we chose the model that we are going to keep for each galaxy. And doing that, we end up with the distribution in redshift. So depending on the model that we use. So in the following is going to be the same color code for all the parts I'm going to show. For the red one, it's those that were well fitted with a single component. And for the blue ones, is those that were better fitted with two components. And here the histogram is normalized because it's easier for you to see the distribution for each model, because you can see that if you look at the numbers, you see that we do not have that many BCGs that are better fitted with two components. Like it's only 10-20% at most. So what's really
is on the y-axis?
It's just an histogram of the distribution.
Okay, so the number.
Yes, it's just normalized. And here, what's really interesting to see is that for example, the one CERC component BCGs, you have them at pretty much all relative, so mostly at higher relative, but here it's mostly due to the distribution of our whole sample. But what's very interesting is that you have those two CERC components that you find mainly at lower relative, and you don't really find them at higher relative. So at lower relative being lower than the what is 0.4, more or less. And we wanted to know why you could only find them at lower relative and you didn't find them at higher relative. And our first intuition was that it could be due to the resolution of your images at higher relative, because if it's at higher distances, then your profile is going to be smoothed out and maybe you're going to only need one component to model your profile. And to check that, we actually in our first paper we took clusters that were at lower redshift, so redshift lower than 0.7, and we degraded the resolution that you have on these images to the resolution that you would have at redshift 1. And we ran Galfit on both the images, on the original images and on the degraded images, and we compared the fits that you had with Galfit. And doing that, we found that there were basically no differences in the fits that you had with Galfit, either on the original or on the degraded images. So this was not due to the resolution of your images. So now we can wonder if this is really a physical result or if there is something else that we missed. And I'm going to go back to this later in this presentation.
For this,
we use the I band, the SDSS I filter. Yeah. So we looked for a field which falls after the 4,000 Armstrong break to always model the same stellar population. So after, it's just the red whole stellar population. And for the HST study that we did, we chose a filter so it will always fall after the 4,000 break. And so here you have, so once again, we tried to see if there was an evolution with time for BCG. So we tried to see if the parameters returned by Gelfit correlated with redshift. So here you have absolute magnitude, effective radius, and on the right you have the mean effective surface brightness, and on the top one is not corrected for cosmological dimming, and the bottom one is corrected for cosmological dimming. And as you can see, you have no evolution for any of these parameters. It stays pretty constant with time, and even for the surface brightness, maybe on this one you could see a faint trend to become brighter with time, maybe a very faint trend, but once you correct for cosmological dimming, it just disappears. So main conclusion was that.
What's the BCG sample?
Okay, so this one?
Yes.
So we try to see those that were blue, so it's a color G minus I color that was negative.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about, yeah. So yes, they do occupy a special place in the explorations, which is interesting as well. So yeah, they tend to be like a little fainter and a little smaller than all the other red BCGs that we had. And just to give you a fraction of blue BCGs, because it's still interesting to know, they are very rare, and they will consist of only 9% of our total sample. That was our main conclusion, that they were mainly formed by redshift 0.7. So maybe you could ask, because we did a study in our first paper and went up to redshift 1.8, and we found that it was most likely the case up to 1.8. You could wonder why we did this study, because it was already confirmed that higher redshift is better resolution. But as I said before, we increased significantly the statistics up to redshift 0.7, and actually in this paper we did the same plot in this paper, but we had some doubt because sometimes there were very, very faint trends and we didn't know if it was like a real trend or if there was no correlation. It was just due to the small size of the sample that we found from the small correlations. But here we can confirm up to redshift 0.7 that there's just no evolution up to the redshift. And here I show you the effective radius as a function of the Celsic index as a function of the effective radius. So here you have the points which are the one Celsic component and the empty square. Therefore, the two Celsic components, and you have an additional information on the redshift of the BCGs. And if you look at only the BCGs that were well fitted with the single component, so the points, you can see that there are the relations that was actually formed by Bayer al 2014, which shows that the Celsic indices are proportional to the effective radius in logarithmic scaling. And then you have this dispersion, this curve of points here at lower ends and with pretty big effective radius because they are all like bigger than 20 kiloparsecs. And that lower redshift as well, which comes from the two Celsic components BCGs. And you can see that more or less the trend is reversed because for one Celsic components, you have bigger galaxies which tend to have bigger Celsic indices, but here it's kind of the opposite. So you wanted to know why you had this two Celsic components, which is kind of what we talked about at the beginning, where you had only two Celsic components at lower redshift. And here you have the distribution of the Celsic indices. So for the one Celsic components, you have Celsic indices which cover a wide range between 0 and 10, mostly at higher ends, actually. But you have this peak for the two Celsic components, they tend to have a peak at lower Celsic indices at like 1.5, which is kind of like, this is kind of like as if they had a disk-like component, that higher redshift galaxies don't have, and we wanted to know why you had this light component at lower redshift and not at higher redshift. And for that, we thought that maybe it was due to the infracluster light or IECL to make it short. So for the ICL, the ICL comes from stars that were stretched from their host galaxies during mergers, and then they form an extended halo of stars. So the stars are not bound gravitationally to any galaxies in the cluster, but they are trapped in the cluster potential. And this is a very faint surface. This is a very faint component with very faint surface brightness in the cluster. So it is very difficult to detect unless you have very deep exposure times. So we thought that maybe at higher redshift you would need very much longer exposure times to be able to detect it, and at lower redshifts you don't need as much time. So maybe you would be able to see it, and maybe this is the ICL would be the display component that you would have at lower redshift. So to check that, we used images of the ICL that were extracted and provided by Jimenez et al. 2018. So on the left you have the original cluster image, on the right you have the ICL image. So I don't know if you can see very well because it's very faint, but you have this kind of blob here, which is the ICL. And what we did was we took this image of the ICL and we subtracted it from the original images, which left us with only the image of the BCG. And we ran GalFit on the original image, so ICL plus galaxy, and on the ICL subtracted images, and we compared the fits. And what we found was that even after subtracting the ICL, you still needed two components to model your galaxy. So the ICL is not the reason why you have two components at your redshift. It's something else again. And but you can see that, however, you have the ICL that can affect your profile at in the outskirts of your galaxy. So here you have the ground deviation, which is mean surface brightness as the function of the effective radius. And you have in green, those are the parameters that were returned on the original images. And in red, you have those that were obtained on ICL separated images. And then T-square are just the same relation that provided for cosmological. And as you can see, the relation gets shifted to smaller, effective radius and greater surface brightnesses. So your ICL can dim your profile and return an extended envelope around your BCG. So it can be a problem for us because that's what we are doing. We are trying to model the luminous profile of BCG, but if you have ICL, then you're not modeling your BCG, you're modeling BCG plus ICL. So it could be a problem for us. But as I said, you need very deep exposure times. And for the CFS-GLS, I don't think you're going to really have effects from the ICL, so it's fine. But the conclusion is mainly that the fact that you have two CRC components, BCGs at lower redshift, is not due to the resolution, and it's not due to the ICL. So it's something else. And I've just been studying it further, this question, and I think it's because of the depth of the images, but I just did that, so I'm not going to talk really about this. And here you have the thermal deviation. So coming back to our original sample, also an additional information on the redshift with different redshift bins. And as you can see, so usually the command duration is for elliptical galaxies, but as you can see, it's also very well defined for BCGs. And we actually have the slope of the relation, which stays consistent at redshift bins. And it's also a little bit steeper than that you will find for elliptical galaxies. And for this relation with redshift, it is actually due to cosmological dimming once again. So once you correct it for cosmological dimming, you see that it just, the relation with redshift disappears and it tightens your relation. So, yeah. And what? Yep, it was also corrected for correction. Yep. And for dust as well. Yep. Yes. And one last point I want to talk about is at the beginning I told you that BCGs can have properties which are closely linked to that of their host clusters, and one of them is their major axis. So BCGs tend to have their major axis which align with the major axis of their host clusters. And we wanted to check that once again. So what we did was we measured the position angle of the cluster by computing their moments of inertia and density maps. And we had the K of the BCG that was written by Gelfit. And we measured the alignment, which we defined by the absolute difference between the P of the BCG and the PA of the cluster. And that we excluded all the BCGs and cluster which appear circular in shape, because then you have the PA which is ill-defined. And we also treated all those that had huge uncertainties on the PA of the cluster. So usually Gelfit would have pretty small uncertainties on the PA of the BCG. So that's why we don't really make a cut for the BCG. But for the cluster, we end up with this distribution with different cuts depending on the uncertainty on the PA of the cluster. We are mainly going to focus on the red one because it's the one that is which has the most strict cut. So it's mostly more likely the most precise one. So for this one, we excluded all cluster which had an uncertainty on the PSL cluster, which was bigger than 35 degrees. And on this, looking at this red distribution, you can find that you have a peak at the smaller indices, which shows that they tend to align with the major axis of the host clusters. And you actually find that you have 55% that are aligned within 35 degrees with the major axis of the cluster, which is not the case when you look at all the galaxies that you have in your cluster, because West et al. 2017, I think, they did the same study by taking into account considering all the galaxies that you have in clusters and computing their alignments, and they found that they had a flat distribution, which shows that all galaxies that are not the BCGs tend to have random orientation in the cluster. So this really shows how BCGs are very special and they have a very close link with their host clusters. And that's the end of my talk. So there's a quick summary, and you have my first paper here for HSC data, and this one is going to be submitted very soon to maybe on archive. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ali. So let's start with the question in person. In remote you can write your question in the chat if you can hear me, and I will read them. So let's start maybe in person with a question in person. Yeah, Eric, please.
So how do you interpret the fact that because I'm not sure you say it, but the fact that there are two components at low ratio?
Yes.
Why is that?
So we are still checking. We are not sure yet, but we checked that it was not the revolution. It's not the ICL. And actually what was important was that in our first study we found that maybe we had 44-45 BCGs that were one of the components, and in this case we increased the sensitivity, but we have about the same number of specific components BCGs in the 2020. And I did a study by comparing the distribution of the model depending on the depth of the media. And so it's still something I'm studying, but so far I found that if you go more in depth, if your images are deeper, you tend to have two sets of components instead of one. So I think it's more likely due to the depth of the image.
It's not physical.
So I don't know, maybe in this case it could be the ICL. I don't think you're going, like, I don't think it's
that deep to be able to see it. I'm not sure yet, but it has something to do with the test.
But imagine it's not due to observations.
Okay.
But it's real.
Then it could be, yeah.
What could it be then?
Well, you have some studies which have found that so it could be that either the bulge or the disc, if you can say bulge or disc, but one of the two components have to perform at later times. Well, after the deployed and you have some studies which have found that which say that you have the envelope of the galaxy which starts to form at the time. So it could be that. So you have a few hypotheses. I'm not sure yet about which one you know, like that.
Is there any link with the cluster themselves? So the properties of the cluster may be different between both with
for the
two component versus one component. Is it more variolized cluster than the others?
Not really. No, we check that
with the richness
with or rich or relaxed, depending on the richness as well, but we can find any correlation.
The correlation.
The question into that, how do you define your cluster? Like your sample, you cut them in mass or?
So for this one, it was from Starway Atlantic. So there were different clusters which had 10 to the bigger than 10 to the power
of and also, do you account for the purity of the sample? Like in the Starway, yes, it's a detection in photo D slices. So we know that maybe 10% of the cluster that we are not real.
That was the case for some. So 10%, like 90% pure. But we started with 7371 clusters, and actually we couldn't detect all of them, all the BCDs in the clusters, and we ended up with a sample of like 1,200. So there were like 10% that we didn't find. It was more or less correlated with the 10% that they had. So maybe we managed to get rid of the.
Okay. Just to make sure that these two Cersei components are not in pathological.
Yeah. Well, to check that we had a good sample, we actually verified all the detections that were made because we first started with a sample of clusters, but then I actually worked some algorithm to detect automatically BCDs on the optical images. And with Florence, we checked all the images to make sure that we have the right one.
Okay.
So it should be good.
Okay, thanks.
Check if there is a relation between the one or two components and the quality of the alignment between the BCG axis and the cluster main axis.
No, we didn't.
Maybe interesting.
Yeah, but usually the major axis is not that different. Because we model each galaxy with one or two components, and usually the major axis, the key of the BCG is the function.
Yeah. Oh.
And this two components of BCG, they are also the bluest. Is the disk red or is the disk?
Yeah, no, they are not necessarily the bluest. The bluest are just, we don't know, so we have to check them.
But if they are blue, it means that you have some kind of deformation going on.
Yeah.
It's not really what you expect from BCD because usually you
have a big then it will depend on the clusters, properties of the cluster that
will change. To study them further to understand what's going on with them.
But you just didn't say that they were forming stars, that's why they have to
be. Because the fact that they are blue and the fact that they are.
No, but when I asked you for the two components, I think you said that it was because they were forming stars after the 0.4, or they accreted stars.
No, just that they maybe had a disk. Developing the time.
They start to develop a disk.
Yeah, I'm not really a disk, but more like an amoeba. I don't really know what it is yet.
So it's either by accretion or by formation.
So it's So you shouldn't have any gaps left.
Okay.
So you shouldn't have performance. You don't have that many blue BCGs which are still forming, okay. So they are still not very well understood, like how the still can be forming stuff like so they can join.
So then the only solution is that this disk is formed by accretion from. So that they might have two phases of accretion, one at the very early universe, they form, and then after some time they accrete the galaxies around and they form like a disk.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, so along this line, so I was wondering whether you do see a correlation of these two, the need for two surfaces with evidence for GTL, compact core.
We didn't.
Okay.
We have to look for galaxies
And also for us, perhaps the contrast between the BCG and the second brightest. You know this fossilness. So
we wanted to check that. The thing with the sample is that we only have photometric pictures, so it's a little difficult. It's like to
rank the second
one was very
difficult
for people not to go in that direction.
Okay.
But we did that for the HSC sample for our first paper. We tried to see if there was comparison between the difference of magnitude between the first and the second brightest. And there was no, we couldn't find the
okay.
But then the sample set was pretty small. So
I'm surprised you only have the photometric pictures.
For this one?
Yeah.
We checked it was from the CGSCRF. So I checked with other catalog, but don't find it.
SDSS, you don't have the spectroscopy?
SDSS
is
not true.
This figure are pretty fine, in fact.
Or VVDS, perhaps.
VVDS is only a small area.
Yeah,
right. How fine they are, because yeah, BCGs, yes, but if you want to study fainter things around, that magnitudes are fainter than
no, but for the BCG,
for the BCG only, okay. This is a good question.
No, they are not in the
LGSS.
I don't think so because I checked and I didn't find any LGSS. So I checked in NED.
But it's not updated.
Oh, maybe. Yes, maybe.
Yeah, maybe there are two
directives.
We are going upwards. No, but the two directives 4.4.
Yeah,
for LRGs.
And you go up to R22.
Yeah. If you don't have a sheet, it probably means that you don't have dynamical information either.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm.
I
could
check the records. Yeah, I was
like,
they don't have it.
Mm. Yeah, but I'm not sure they have updated the.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Another question about the two components.
Okay.
So, so you have a CERCIC exponential profile component, and can you see from the residual if sign of patterns, that, like your arms, or is it just a smooth disk, or is it a disk with clear signature arms or
they are just
it's smooth. Is there a smooth disk?
Yeah.
Exponential disk.
Yes.
Actually,
like
SO.
But the only one which has some signatures could be the blue one. But for the red ones, usually we don't have any signatures.
Population of something related to the
yeah. Well, from there you see dust lines. Perhaps with HST.
Yeah, so with HST, yes, we did find a few which had like some accretion, like kind of accretion or some like UV filaments, and they were not necessarily blue, but they were still very well. Like, there are like maybe 5 of them in our 100. And, and that there's actually a good study which was made by Kathy Nani. I could send you the link. And they studied the sample of like 5 BCGs with a very clear sign of star formation.
Actually, it made me think that if they are in a GSS,
yes,
they probably also have a stellar masses too. Because there is a.
Okay. So here we have the stellar mass estimate of the cluster, but not of the.
Yeah, from the BCG.
So there is another question from Carlo in the chat. So as for the study of alignment based, am I correct that you computed the moments of the density field? If yes, how did you take care of the boundaries? Did you consider the full raw image, or did you apply some mask? That is, how did you take care of the outskirts and environment?
Yeah, so for the element of inertia, so to detect the clusters, because the density maps were made by somewhere up and use the distribution of redshifts, the distribution of galaxies in the same redshift beam in the image to compute the density maps. And for me, I computed the moment of inertia up to the, so I took an aperture of
R500, and I computed
the moment of
inertia in that. Right, yes. Mm-hmm. Have you tried for a subsample to, because okay, when you compute the main angle with the galaxies, it's always a bit uncertain.
Yeah.
Did you try to do this with the data?
No. Because I'm not sure we have experiments for all of them.
You probably have some of them.
We have some of them, but I didn't try to do them yet.
Yes.
I did do a small study with X-rays on the first study to see if there was an interaction between the distance between the X-ray center and the position of the diffusion. And like this, the distance and the property that you measure with the calculation is not again. But sometimes what's really interesting is you can have the position of
the BCD, which is really offset from the peak of the X-ray.
So no relation between the speed in the nature and the.
No. Yeah,
it was a little disappointing.
What is spinning CD?
Spinning CD. What is that?
The CD is not from the XSF. This is common. Not so common, but not very rare. Exactly.
Why do we change the name from CD to CD?
Because CD has okay,
it was already clear CD.
So a long story. I had several troubles with the theories explaining me that BCG is not CD. The CD has okay, all CDs are BCGs, but not all BCGs are CDs.
Yeah.
It's a question of profile of extension.
Remember, we are all with BCG.
So now you have to say BCG if you want to be correct. Okay. So and if you are in a group, you have to say BGG.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other questions? No. Okay, so I think we can stop here. And maybe also the next Café Club of Next week, we will have Benedetta Spina, who will talk about evolution of helium reionization. And yeah, thanks to Aline again.
For those who are in person, Aline is there until 3 p.m. today, and she's in the former Euclid rooms on the first floor east wing, if you want to talk further with her. And we'll go for lunch during noon at the canteen. So if you want to join as well and have a chat, just let us know.
And if you don't find her in this office, that's by my office.
And yeah, just Carlo, does it does she answer to you to your question, or maybe because you maybe you didn't hear?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Some problem because with the noise.
Sorry, I cannot hear you. Okay. Oui, exactly.